Hello, and welcome to A History of Japan. Season 7, Episode 9, Kamakura Buddhism. The latter Heian period saw an increase in violence both toward and from the larger monasteries, and by the end of the Genpei War, the great hordes of Sōhei warrior monks had largely depleted. Even by the Jōkyū War of 1224, not a single monastery could boast a sizable force to help retired Emperor Go-Toba. At the end of the 1100s and throughout the first few decades of the 1200s, most of the larger establishments were focused on rebuilding what had been lost during the Genpei War, starting with the buildings themselves. The rebuilding of Todaiji intersected with our narrative at the beginning of this season, but many other temples and monasteries had been destroyed or suffered damage from neglect during the great struggle between the Taira and Minamoto. Rebuilding meant securing patronage from the powerful, wealthy families who had always kept these institutions afloat in years past, but some of these families had seen their incomes reduced or even obliterated entirely as Yoritomo's Bakufu seized estates and appointed new Jito to manage them. These conditions were like fertile soil in which new religious movements could take root, and for those forms of Buddhism which had become popular in Western Japan to spread eastward. We discussed Pure Land Buddhism last season, but it's worthwhile to recall its particulars here. Pure Land Buddhism believes that the world had entered a stage which the Japanese called Mappo, an age of ignorance and corruption in which obtaining individual enlightenment or awakening was impossible. One of the Buddhas, called Buddha Amida in Japanese, created a paradise called the Pure Land for anyone who called upon him for help. Thus the phrase Namu Amida Butsu became a sort of mantra for believers which they would chant. The oldest schools of Buddhism in Japan were largely ritualistic in nature and appealed to the Japanese of the Asuka, Nara, and early Heian periods through spectacle and mystery. The new doctrine of Pure Land was so simple and personal by contrast that it seems at first surprising that it would gain such popularity among both the common people and the nobility of Heian-kyō. The troubles and upheavals of the later Heian period created a need among both high and low to feel some sense of security in the midst of what seemed like an increasingly chaotic age. The East had largely ignored this new doctrine until the Kamakura period. Kanto is a lush region for cultivating rice and other crops, and the shortages which caused famines and suffering in the West did not cause the same amount of chaos and upheaval in the East. At the beginning of the Kamakura period, the well-fed warriors of Kanto saw their stars rising in a way they probably hadn't thought was possible. It probably seemed to them that the world was becoming more ordered and peaceful, especially compared to the rampant violence which had engulfed parts of the Kanto region before the Bakufu's establishment. Near the beginning of the Kamakura period, two champions of Pure Land argued for making it the primary doctrine around which all other beliefs were subordinate. The first was Hōnen, who had taken vows as a Buddhist monk in the mid-1100s at the age of 9. He was trained through a 12-year program at Mount Hiei, a program which had been developed by Saicho himself nearly 400 years earlier. Continually dissatisfied with Tendai teachings, he left Mount Hiei and diligently studied every sutra he could get his hands on to learn how to bring about universal enlightenment. After visiting numerous temples, including Kofukuji and Todaiji, and raiding their extensive libraries, he found his answer in a sutra commentary written by a Chinese monk named Shan Dao from the mid-600s. The text which inspired Hōnen was this passage, quote, "Only repeat the name of Buddha Amida with all your heart. Whether walking or standing, sitting or lying, never cease the practice of it for even a moment. This is the very work which unfailingly issues in salvation, for it is in accordance with the original vow of that Buddha. End quote. For Honen, this became his linchpin. The only thing necessary to be saved from the cycle of reincarnation and be reborn into the pure land of Amida was to take refuge in his name. Chanting Namu Amida Butsu, which is called the Nembutsu, had been a regular part of Buddhist rituals among many temples already, but as a supplement to other rituals and practices. Honen argued that the Nembutsu should be made the primary teaching of Buddhism nationwide, and that all other practices and doctrines should be subordinate to it. Ironically, in placing the Nembutsu in a position of dominance, Honen was going far beyond anything that the monk Shandao was actually recommending back in the mid-600s. Shandao's other writings place many requirements on the practitioner to be reborn into the pure land, not just chanting the Nembutsu alone. The doctrine which Honen promoted was, in essence, very similar to the Christian concept of unconditional salvation by grace. Honen founded a new school of Buddhism called Jodo Shu, the Pure Land School. Staying true to his original vision of bringing salvation to all beings, Honen was not content to preach only to the nobility or the samurai. In 1175, he left Mount Hiei and preached his doctrine in the streets of Heian-kyo. At first, he gained many powerful patrons and supporters, including the imperial regent Fujiwara Kanezane. He preached to prostitutes, reformed criminals, and many other members of Heian society who were usually barred from entering the temples. Some of his more passionate followers, however, started drawing their own conclusions from his emphasis on the primacy of Nembutsu. Some of them vandalized the existing temples in Heian-kyo, while others concluded that they were allowed to engage in behavior usually considered immoral, since all they needed to do to be saved was chant the Nembutsu. A combination of his popularity as well as the raucous behavior of his devotees earned him some powerful enemies from within the existing Buddhist establishment. Jokye and Myoe were both respected reformers from more traditional schools who each sought, in their own way, to revise the doctrines and practices from their respective denominations to make them more relevant to contemporary times. They joined forces against Honen and his followers, petitioning retired Emperor Go-Toba to censure the Nembutsu movement and exile its leaders. Honen made some effort to discipline his flock, expelling a monk named Kosai who was teaching that a single Nembutsu was sufficient to obtain Buddha Amida's salvation, and enforcing a morality pledge among those who wished to officially join Jodo Shu. This satisfied the court until two of retired Emperor Go-Toba's entourage were caught in an illicit sexual affair, and their immorality was connected to Nembutsu teachings, as both were devotees. In 1207, Honen and the rest of the Jodo Shu leadership were exiled from the capital. Honen himself was sent to Tosa province on Shikoku, and he publicly proclaimed that this development pleased him because he would continue spreading his teachings to the common people of Tosa. One of his most prominent followers, a monk named Shinran, was sent to Echigo province on the northeastern edge of Chubu. Good to his word, Honen continued spreading the message of Nembutsu and built quite a following on Shikoku. Back in the capital, those followers he had left behind still worked to get the ban lifted and annul the sanctions against them. Shinran, meanwhile, built his own community of believers in northeastern Chubu among the common people whom he now worked alongside. His own version of Jodo Shu would evolve along lines of faith and belief rather than practice alone, and it would eventually diverge enough from Honen's teachings that it was considered a different movement. The school which Shinran founded is called Jodo Shinshu, or the True Essence of the Pure Land. In 1211, a little over 4 years since the ban was pronounced, retired Emperor Go-Toba lifted the prohibition and pardoned Honen and his ringleaders. Honen returned to Heian-kyo shortly thereafter, but Shinran chose instead to establish a base closer to the Bakufu, founding a community in Kanto, just north of modern-day Tokyo. Today, their respective schools, Jodo-shu and Jodo-shinshu, are the most popular among all the Buddhist sects in Japan. In fact, the closest Buddhist temple to me here in America is of the Jodo-shinshu persuasion. My family and I very much enjoy attending their Obon festivities. In addition to their activities in building and maintaining religious communities, Honen and Shinran also wrote commentaries and treatises. Honen authored the Senchaku Hongan Nembutsushu, or Collection of Selections on Nembutsu and the Original Vow, in 1198 at the request of his patron Fujiwara Kanezane. The audience for this document was extremely limited, and Honen only allowed a few people to read it before his death, as he was afraid it would only invite renewed criticism from the traditional schools. As he grew ill, and his life drew to a close in 1212, only 1 year after the ban against Nembutsu teachings was lifted, Honen composed the Ichimai Kishomon, or one-sheet document, which summarized his teachings in simple language for future generations. Shinran, meanwhile, composed his opus entitled Kyogyo Shinsho, which translates to The True Teaching, Practice, and Realization of the Pure Land Way. This massive work was a collection of sutra selections and commentaries which supported Nembutsu practice, as well as the other doctrines of Jodo Shinshu. Drawing from an impressive breadth of Buddhist scripture, Shinran included many ancient sutras which originally came from India to give Jodo Shinshu historical legitimacy. Shinran returned to the capital in 1234, having founded and nourished many communities in Kanto. When he discovered that his son, who was still in the East, had begun building his own cult and telling people that he had received secret teachings from his father, Shinran penned a series of angry letters to him, which ultimately resulted in his disowning his son. In 1263, after firmly establishing Jodo Shinshu's place in the capital, Shinran died. His daughter, Kakushinni, gathered financial support from patrons around the capital and built for her father a great tomb called the Ōtani Mausoleum. Much later, in 1321, Kakushinni's descendants would found Hōganji Temple on the site of Ōtani Mausoleum, and it remains to this day the largest Jodo Shinshu temple in the world. As for Shinran's students and followers, at first he did not have much success among the Kanto samurai who were skeptical of this age of decline he spoke of. It is interesting to note, however, that after the Jōkyū War in 1224, more warriors seemed interested in learning about Jodo Shinshu and Nembutsu. However, for much of the warrior class, the teachings of Shinran and Honen would always take a backseat to a new school, which had the distinction of being patronized by Minamoto Yoritomo himself. You may remember hearing the name Eisai in episodes 3 and 5 when we discussed his relationship with Yoritomo and later with his son Sanetomo. Long before those days, Eisai was just another dissatisfied Tendai monk who was frustrated by the state of Buddhism in Japan during the latter Heian period. In 1168, he traveled to China and stayed at Mount Tiantai to learn and train at the place where Saicho had learned and trained before founding the Tendai school in Japan. His first stay was only 6 months, but he was able to return in 1187 and remain until 1191. During his time in China, he became enamored with Chan, which had become the dominant form of Buddhist practice in China. Known as Zen in Japanese, this is the form of Buddhism which most Western people are familiar with. It is focused on meditation, but also includes self-discipline, doing good to others, community, and insight into the self and the nature of reality. During his second trip to China, Eisai was taught by Xuan Huaichang of the Linji school and received his certification as a Zen master. Bringing Zen scriptures, green tea seeds, and his shiny new certification, Eisai returned to Japan in 1191 and founded the Rinzai school. Rinzai is the Japanese version of Linji, thus connecting this new school to long-established movements in China. While Saicho is often credited as the man who first brought green tea to Japan, it was Eisai who championed and popularized the drink among the warrior class. Convinced of its alleged health benefits, Eisai promoted it first as a medicine which he believed could help the people through the difficult times the nation was going through. He administered it to Minamoto Sanetomo when he was sick, and he tried to cure the shogun of his alcoholism by replacing his alcohol with green tea. This did not work, but that did not stop Eisai from writing about the many benefits of green tea in a famous treatise entitled Kisa Yojoki, or Drinking Tea for Health. While the warrior class was generally unimpressed by the Nembutsu movements, Zen Buddhism held a special appeal for them. Its emphases on mystery, self-reflection, and discipline made it just interesting enough to pique the average samurai's curiosity, and just similar enough to their regular life to be relevant. Both Pure Land and Zen would undergo developments during the Kamakura period as new practitioners would rise to prominence and leave their own mark on the schools. In 1267, a monk named Nampo Shomyo returned from China and founded the Otokan lineage of the Rinzai school. Eventually, the Otokan lineage would be the only strain of the Rinzai school that remained, and it still exists to this day. Of course, Rinzai was not the only new Zen school to emerge during the time of Kamakura. In 1215, a monk named Dogen would return from China to found the Soto Zen school, which also thrived throughout the 1200s. The Nara schools joined forces with their former mortal enemies, the Tendai and Shingon schools, to try and prevent the growth of these movements within the capital area and the broader Kansai region. While these efforts were often successful in the short term, as it was with the early Nembutsu leaders, the eventual consequences were usually the establishment of these new forms of Buddhism within various remote provinces throughout the nation, just like what happened with the early Nembutsu leaders. One Buddhist preacher who embraced a constantly traveling lifestyle was a man named Ippen, who founded a sect called Jishu, or Time Sect. While essentially of the Pure Land persuasion, Ippen clearly felt very drawn towards Zen discipline and incorporated a schedule for his practitioners which included daily chanting. The reason for its name, the Time Sect, is because of these regular schedules. Lastly, one cannot reasonably have a discussion about Kamakura Buddhism without talking about Nichiren. A Buddhist priest from the Tendai school, Nichiren wanted to reform Tendai and indeed all Buddhism throughout the land. He launched his solo career in 1253, proclaiming that all of the troubles taking place in Japan were caused by a lack of proper religious devotion by its people. The 1250s were an especially hard time, full of famines, earthquakes, huge storms, and other natural disasters which visited continual tragedies upon the people. Nichiren wanted to put an end to all of that through implementing a form of Buddhism which was strikingly intolerant, fundamentalist, and nationalistic all at once. He elevated the Lotus Sutra above all others, claiming that it was the only valid sutra suitable to help navigate the age of Mappo. He wrote extensively, got into heated debates with rival leaders, and ultimately got into hot water with the shogunate. The Buddhist establishment especially hated this troublesome priest, so they collaborated with the Bakufu to have him exiled. In 1261, he gave them sufficient reason when he officially submitted a treatise entitled Risho Ankoku Ron, or Establishing the Correct Teachings for the Peace of the Land, in which he demanded the governing authorities immediately cut off all funding for all temples nationwide which failed to accept Nichiren's own leadership in matters of doctrine and practice. He claimed that if his words were not heeded, then the nation would be invaded and subjugated by a foreign power. He also blamed the troubles of the nation on the unrighteousness of the shogunate and the Hojo clan specifically, and, well, they did not care for that. In 1261, Nichiren was exiled, but this did not produce the results which the Bakufu desired. He continued to study and write during this time, more certain than ever that he was right and that his idea of Buddhism should be the only one allowed. The safety of the nation depended on it. After being pardoned in 1263, he returned to Kamakura and began preaching once more. After surviving an assassination attempt, he took his teachings on a tour of the broader Kanto for 5 years. In 1268, he returned to Kamakura after learning of a recent visit from the new overlords of China. He had predicted in his Risho Ankoku Ron that Japan would be invaded and subjugated by a foreign power if they failed to heed his teachings and reform every Buddhist establishment in the nation as he saw fit. The threats made by these envoys shook the leaders of the shogunate to the core. Perhaps Nichiren was more than just an obnoxious, intolerant fundamentalist. Perhaps he really was a prophet, after all. Many of the Buddhist movements of the Kamakura period would continue rippling throughout Japanese history for centuries to come. Next time, we will turn our eyes to China and see what developments lay in store for the Jin Dynasty in the north and the Song Dynasty in the south as they wrangle with an emerging power which would eventually create the largest empire in all of world history. Until then, thank you for listening. If you would like access to exclusive bonus episodes, as well as ad-free versions of the regular episodes, please consider supporting this podcast at patreon.com/ahistoryofjapan.